how do you get into dentistry to start with?
Well, I got into dentistry because in a way that I think many do. I was impressed by my hometown dentist. He was an awfully nice person, and he would talk to me about what he was doing, you know, instruments that he had, and how he kind of ran his own healthcare facility there, and it just seemed very attractive. So along with his personality and somewhat my own interest in detail type of things, little details and whatnot. Actually, if you aren't detail oriented, you can't be a dentist. I mean, we work in the field of microns. I started my practice here in Middleburg after 4 years being a dentist in the Navy. After 4 years of that, why I started in 1976.
Now, I remember joking with you. You say, well, I'm just a little country dentist out here in the middle of the country. What you don't tell everybody, of course, is that you're doing that in the highest income county in the country.
Well, I don't know if it's the highest income county in the country. It has a very high average. It's a very rural county, first of all. But it does have a very high average because there's, you know, a half a dozen or a dozen of the richest people in the country that live here. But 12 people will not make a practice, especially a two-dentist practice. I would say if you tossed out that upper level, it really is a well-rounded general practice.
What do you think it takes to build a good practice these days?
Well, it takes a lot of work and a lot of determination and a lot of desire to really, you know, want a practice of your own individual dreams. I just said, well, this is what I want. I want to be as good as I can be, which means I've got to take a lot of CE, which I've always enjoyed. And even now as a lecturer, having been on the circuit for 25 years or so, I feel that every time I've given a lecture, I've learned a lot of things from the audience, comments and coming up afterwards, and plus the reading that you have to do to, you know, to stand up in front of a group of people who are going to ask any kind of question. You've got to have the depth and background. And so with that reading and taking courses, why, it enabled me to really kind of feel confident about what I was doing. That's what CE does for you. And when you have competence, you develop confidence, and that shows in front of the patient. And so you deliver a good service in a way that the patient really begins to feel they've come to the best dentist around.
Over the years, you've probably tried a few different marketing ideas. What has worked the best for you?
I really didn't do any so-called external marketing, if you will. Advertising when I started a practice in 1976 was illegal. Didn't come along until the late 70s, the Bates decision there. And I think right now the absolute key essential element is a high-level website with your philosophy expressed there. And it has to be true. The philosophy can't be just a bunch of flowery words that sound nice on paper or when read. They actually have to totally reflect you, because people pick up when there's inconsistencies there in behavior versus what's said. So you write your own philosophy. It should be just a description of what you are and what it is you're trying to do. And then you have to have the photos up there, quality photos of your dentistry and, you know, the whole aspect of it. That is the most essential thing. I did a lot of internal marketing, though, which is kill the patient with kindness. I mean, took a lot of courses on communication skills, people skills. When I got out of the military, I knew that I didn't have people skills and communication skills. I had learned a lot of dentistry in school and took a postgraduate year at Bethesda Naval Hospital and 3 years practicing in the Navy. I'd gotten my skills up there to a pretty decent degree, but my people skills and communication skills weren't good, so I took courses on that and read a lot of books on that and applied that stuff. So the word of mouth actually was what would build it. Obviously got into the community, the kids in school, and Lions Club, and all of those kinds of things, and I think those are important.
Yeah, I can remember walking into your office and seeing pictures of people with teeth, and you had a great comment. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do, because it was true. I would visit dentists in their offices, and they'd have pictures on the wall of their hobbies. You know what they did, like if they fished, they'd have pictures of them holding this big fish up or something. You know, I just feel that that, you know, if you're sending the wrong message, you can have those in your private office, but you should have nice smiles and healthy smiles. That's the kind of message. That's your business that you're in. I think I said in a lecture once that I was in some offices that had so many fish on the wall, I thought I was in an aquarium. You know, so if you're really serious about your business, that's how it should be. And obviously, the office should be a reflection, too. Marketing, as you know, Mike, because you're a consummate person in this area, is a consistent message, all basically coordinated to give the right image and say the same thing. And so that starts from the time they park in your parking lot, if it's neat and clean, and walk into the building, and especially into your office.
I agree. Now, listen, you're a consummate lecturer. Tell me how that all started and what that whole process means to you.
Well, it started by accident. That's the God's honest truth. And then actually, for the first 15 years, I kept thinking it was still an accident. I was always amazed when a group would call. It happened because of things that I was doing for my patients. You may remember some of this in your time with Ivoclar. So I was looking for something whereby we could put tooth colored materials. Ceramic inlays weren't working very well. We didn't have techniques for that. So I thought composite made a lot of sense if we could just make it better. And then your company, or Ivoclar, the one you were working with at the time, came up with a heat and pressure cured composite inlay system. So it appeared at a time when I was actually looking for it. And it was at the very earliest days. It hadn't even been, it wasn't a system for sale yet when I first heard about it. I actually went over to Liechtenstein on my own to learn more about it. Just showed up. Wasn't even thinking you should call beforehand. Fortunately, the scientists were there, and they welcomed me in and showed me the whole thing. So as soon as it became available, even earlier than that, I became a beta tester for them, and was using it just on my own patients. And next thing you know, the other dentist in town's hearing about it, wants to know about it, and then a group of local dentists at a study club asked, you know, they heard about it. And I always took pictures, so I always took, those were back in, you know, days of slides, and they wanted me to share the information, so I did. And then months after that, an actual local dental society in Maryland asked if I'd give them a lecture. And, you know, up until then, it was glorifying it to call it a lecture. It was really just a share sort of thing. And then I thought, well, all right, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to learn how to organize a presentation. And I did. And then after that one, well, it just kept going.
You worked for LVI. Tell me about that.
19 years. When Bill started it in 1994, it was kind of interesting because he and myself and Hornbrook and Rosenthal and Nixon and Ross Nash and a bunch of others that were kind of talking and lecturing early 90s on adhesion, Baylor University, Bill Walton was head of the CE department down there, started these first ever really live patient courses. And he just called people that were talking about topics because this, again, was when dentin bonding just started, and so there's a lot of new procedures and all, and it just opened up a whole new way of doing things in dentistry. And then when that ended, so that's when all these institutes started. Bill went out to LVI and started it, and a year later he asked me to join him, and been there for 19 years. Now, I just retired from there. Actually, last fall was my last course.
Sort of outside of dentistry now, what do you like to do? I mean, what's fun for you?
Believe it or not, my wife and I enjoy travel. And we have a place, a small cottage in the Cotswolds of England. I've had that for over 20 years now. Spent a lot of time there. We're Anglophiles of the first order. We spend time going to the stately homes and gardens. We love beautiful gardens and meeting people and going to the pubs and actually traveling to different cultures and, you know, seeing different parts of the world, how different they are. We do that quite a lot. Reading, I always have novels. I'm always have one that I'm reading, you know, to take your mind, otherwise it goes all the time. So that and movies, films, which do the same kind of thing. They take you to a different place. And we have a farm here and love horses. One of them's a small pony. When the grandkids come, they ride around on the pony. By the way, that's kind of a big hobby right now, is the grandkids. You know, spending time with them. You know, don't want to miss the joy of watching them grow up. That, I would say, is a major hobby.
There's no secret that you love your Guinness.
Yes. Yes, well, I love my Guinness and I love my pints at pubs over there. A pub in England is a different, it's a different thing than anything else in the world. There's no concept of it in, say, an American bar or a bar in any other country. There, especially where our cottage is loaded with country pubs, it's a social thing. I mean, everybody goes and they talk. We lived in England while I was stationed there with the Navy. And so we fell in love with the history and the culture of that place and the beauty of it too. It's just very, you know, it's a small country, so you can see a lot of. But it's really different. I mean, when you take the parts of it, Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland and England and then Ireland, which is not part of Great Britain but a separate country, but part of the Isles over there. We've got a lot of close friends there. It's a very close second home. You know, it's not like a beach house or something. It's actually a community and a home that we have.
Can you speak a little to what dentistry has meant to you or given to you?
It's incredible what it's given to me. I mean, you know, I and I'm still involved. I mean, I'm going to continue practicing as long as I can. I like chairside dentistry. I'm going to stay involved, again, as long as I can, in product development. As you know, I've done a lot of consulting for various companies. You know, if you were to say what has been my biggest hobby, it wouldn't be outside dentistry. It would be inside dentistry.
What final advice would you give a younger dentist at this point?
Well, I think they're going to have a great future. I know there's a lot of concern. There's negativity in it now with, you know, is corporations going to take over the field and what are they going to do to the profession, all that sort of stuff. Well, you know, I don't operate that way. I think that the young dentist has to learn as much as they can and be discriminating who they associate with. Continue to take CE because your skills are what's going to carry you. And then begin to formulate, you know, mentors are very important. You know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Find somebody that's doing it right and copy them. And then you will form your vision, always thinking in terms of what it is you like to do in dentistry, the areas of dentistry that give you joy. Do not think you have to do everything in the office. This is another, my opinion again, is that practice management people want you to keep expanding across the board so that everybody that walks in there, no matter what their problem is, you're going to be the one that treats it. I think that's a terrible advice. You'll become an expert in the things you love to do by just doing those things. You'll find mentors willing to help and share and find somebody doing it right and talk to them and with the idea of finding what it is you like to do and formulating your vision for your practice future. Don't wait until, and there are a number of people out there 10 years that are still bouncing off walls. I was one of them. Took me a while when I started to practice to develop my own mind, a philosophy of approach to dentistry and find out what I liked and a plan to achieve it. But that's what the young person's got to do. That's what the 10-year person's got to do. And it is never too late, but you really do have to develop a philosophy and a plan. You can't just react. You know, you have to be proactive. You can direct it. I think a lot feel they're powerless, that everything is affecting them and that they don't have these choices, but they do.